Perry! It floated up on the breeze and filled my ears and brought me back to life. Instead of laughing, I took the last bit of strength and kicked up with my legs. I felt the satisfying crunch of a broken jawbone as my right foot connected with Roddy's face and felt him fall back under the impact. I twisted myself forward from the waist and out of the window as the kelp fronds released my neck. I landed on the floor and took in the biggest gulp of air possible. Roddy lay on the ground, twitching. He yelped in pain, and once again I found myself wondering if he was dead or alive. Either way, I wasn't about to hang around and find out. I staggered past him toward the staircase just as one of his kelp fronds flew out and almost grasped my leg. I leaped over the snaking strand and landed with a thud on the first landing below. My shins felt shot, but I managed to keep going until I ran down a couple of flights of stairs. Far away from the dying light, everything was black, but I could still sense I was on the floor with the desk. "Dex!" I screamed. "Dex, where are you?" I heard a thump from upstairs and a sick, sopping sound. I knew Roddy was crawling down the stairs with the wet kelp trailing behind him. I ran down the stairs to the next level in a few leaps and screamed for Dex again. "Perry, I'm in here." I heard Dex's muffled cry to my left. I ran forward and hit the door to the room that we were in earlier. My feet were immediately wet. With no other light available, I fumbled for my iPhone and shone it at the door. Water was pouring out from the bottom and flooding the hallway. The door handle jiggled as if being pulled from the other side. Dex had to be in there. "Dex!" I pounded on the door. "Perry, the door's stuck. I think a pipe burst. It's flooding in here and fast," he yelled from the other side. I frantically pulled at the door, but it didn't budge. The sound of Roddy slowly coming down the stairs only added to the urgency. "Dex, there is someone else in here with us. Roddy, he tried to kill me. You have to get out. There's a window. You'll have to jump out of it. I have to go down the stairs." "Don't leave me in here," I heard him scream, and my heart dropped a little. He was finally as terrified as I was, and with good reason. "I'm sorry, Dex. I can't get in, and we have to get out now." A thump, followed by a clatter. I spun around and saw an oil lamp slowly coming down the stairs toward me. It slowed and curved as it rolled, and then proceeded to crash down the rest of the stairs to the floor below. It landed around the corner with a smashing sound and the tinkle of glass. The staircase below me lit up, and within seconds, hot flames licked the walls and made their way back up the stairs toward me. "Perry, the key!" Dex cried. Of course. In my oxygen-deprived, fear-rattled brain, I had forgotten that I had the key. I heard the thump of Roddy come closer. He must have been on the landing just above me. The flames had now climbed to the landing below me, and I had the key to get us both out of here. Holding my phone with one hand, I fumbled in my pocket with the other, my stumpy fingers feeling around awkwardly for our saving grace. I pulled it out and stuck it into the lock, turning as quickly as I could. Before I could even pull on the handle, the door flew open and a huge gush of seawater flowed out into the hallway. The force knocked me over, and the stream pushed me into the bedroom across the hall. The water was about 4 feet deep, even as half of it flowed down the stairs to the lower level. I could feel the fluttering branches of hundreds of kelp slapping my body in the dark water, and I started kicking out frantically. It was black in the bedroom, but there was light coming from the flames that still climbed up the walls of the staircase as if it had been doused in gasoline. I got to my feet and called for Dex. I heard splashing and saw a silhouette appear hunched over in the doorway. I would have thought it was Roddy had I not seen the outline of the camera being held high above his head like a trophy. Even when faced with drowning, Dex still had his priorities straight. He called out for me, and in seconds he was standing in front of me, the water only coming up to his chest. He reached over for me, his free hand coming for my shoulder. "Oh, thank God, he started. Before he could finish his sentence and before his hand had a chance to grasp me, I felt the snaky grip of kelp around my ankle. I screamed, but it was too late. I was pulled under the water at an alarming rate. With my eyes open, I could only make out blackness through the murky water, highlighted by dancing orange fire above the surface. My lungs were filling with the salt water, choking me. In my disorienting underwater prison, I heard the muted yells of Dex and the faraway sound of glass breaking. I also heard the voice.
"I've been waiting for another like you," came the disembodied metallic sounds of the lighthouse keeper through unseen underwater channels. "There just aren't enough ships anymore."
I felt another kelp strand wrap around my waist and pull me farther away from the surface. As impossible as it seemed, I knew I was drowning in a bottomless ocean.
and unlike earlier, the liquid that filled my lungs this time overtook me. I kicked weakly and tried in vain to wriggle out of the hold around my waist. Maybe this is what the old lady had in mind for me. Maybe death was my fate here. It caught up to me again. Suddenly, I felt a pair of hands feel the top of my head. One of them grasped my hair and pulled. The pain at the sharp motion felt vague. The other hand reached under my left arm and pulled. With one giant yank, I was pulled above the surface. Dex's voice filled my ears. My eyes fluttered open, and I saw the flames that surrounded us, the heat filling the air above the cold water. I coughed up the water in my lungs and gasped fruitlessly for air, only to fill my lungs with hot, smoky dust. "Can you jump?" I heard Dex say as he pulled me to my feet. His voice seemed like a million miles away. I nodded weakly, not even sure what he was asking. He pulled me over to the porthole window, now smashed open. He wanted us to jump out and onto the cliff below. It seemed like madness, but we had no other choice. Though the water in the building started receding and no longer flowed in from the other room, the fire was unstoppable and almost growing off the water at times, as if it was fuel. If we stayed a few minutes longer, we would no doubt be burned alive, and that's just what old Roddy wanted. Dex looked out the window to assess the situation below, then turned and put his hands on both of my shoulders. He looked me square in the eye. The light from the flames danced across his wet face. He had a large scratch running down the side of his forehead. His eyes were fearful but determined as they peered mercilessly into mine. I noticed he didn't have his camera on him anymore. Maybe saving me was more important, I thought vaguely. He shook me slightly to get me to focus. "I don't want to leave you, but I'll have to go first. That way I can break your fall," he said. "Go limp," was all I managed to say, remembering the most important thing about taking a fall from my stuntwoman classes. He nodded, then he leaned forward and kissed my forehead in a very surreal moment. The sudden display of affection was touching and terribly out of place. And just like that, he dropped out of the window. I poked my head out of the porthole to see if he was okay. He had landed and rolled over, clutching his arm, but at least alive. He looked up at me. "Come on." I began to pull myself up on the windowsill.
"You can't leave,"
the voice moaned from behind me. It sent chills down my spine, despite the roaring heat of the advancing flames. I turned around as quickly as I could in the water. The lighthouse keeper stood in the doorway, his outline stark against the orange light. The flames now snaked into the room along the doorframe and steadily climbed the walls like pyrotechnic hands searching for something to ignite. I knew I had little time before the flames engulfed me completely. I also knew I couldn't leave just yet. Though he was completely across the room, I had no doubt his kelp tentacles could easily ensnare me again with a flick of his wrists. No one would save me this time. I had to know how this was going to end. "Why me?" I asked. "Why did you start coming for me, in my dreams, to this place? What do you want?" I shouted over the roar of the flames. He grinned, white teeth against the black void.
"I was told you would listen."
"Who told you?" I barked as the fire came closer. I could hear Dex yelling for me to jump from outside.
"She told me you would listen and that she would come, that you'd help me, that you'd free me. I've been so lonely. I've been waiting for someone like you."
His head lowered as if he was genuinely sad. I felt nothing for him. "You'll have to keep waiting," I said, determination rising in my voice. He looked up with a sneer and the kelp came flying my way. With less than a second to react, I jumped up on the window and launched myself off the building. I was going to land to the left of Dex, and for a second, it looked like a group of bushes might break my fall, but that wasn't the case. I managed to get in landing position in midair and then go limp as my legs, knees bent, slammed into the ground. Thankfully, the grass was wet and soft, and I was able to propel myself off of it and go into a low roll. I rolled for 2 revolutions before I sprang up to my feet again. I looked behind me and saw the cliff end less than a meter away. Dex, who had been yelling this whole time, ran over and grabbed my arm. "Are you okay?" he asked frantically. I was okay, so far. I looked up at the porthole to see old Roddy's shadow standing there, looking down on us. The flames now had completely taken over the room and were licking at the edges of his raincoat. Do you see him? I whispered to Dex, not taking my eyes off of the horrific sight.
Yes, I do,
Dex replied quietly, and to my relief. As flames engulfed old Roddy, he extended his arm out of the window and pointed at the sea, just as he had in my dreams. I turned to look. There was nothing there except the steady, beaming swirl of the Tillamook lighthouse doing her duty offshore. I looked back up and saw him slowly disintegrate into the fire. Dex turned to me.
We've got to get out of here.
He grabbed my hand and scampered over to the nearby bushes. He reached in and pulled out his camera. He must have tossed it outside before jumping out of the window. The bulb for the light had broken, but other than that, it looked like his gamble turned out okay. With the camera safely tucked under his arm, we were off and running northward, skirting around the lighthouse as far away as we could. The sound of sirens began to fill the air in the distance, and the severity of the situation hit me. Uncle Al's lighthouse would burn to the ground because of us. How the hell were we ever going to explain this? We slipped and slid down the cliff and made it to the dunes when a large explosion threw both Dex and me into the sand. Instinctively, I covered my neck with my hands as small pieces of debris rained down. We lay there for a minute. I could feel Dex on the wet, crunchy sand beside me and heard him move, obviously alive. When I saw the fragments of the blown lighthouse had stopped falling, I lifted up my head and looked at him. He was covering his head with his camera, which was surely embedded with deep grains of sand now. From my shattered lens last week to his scratched-up camera today, this place was not audio-visual friendly. "Are you okay?" I asked. I tapped him with my hand. He rolled over on his back, groaning and wincing with his eyes shut in discomfort.
"Where did you learn to roll like that?"
he muttered, his voice low and broken. "What?" I asked, spitting out sand. He opened his eyes wide as the flames from the explosion danced in his dark pupils. I rolled over on my back, lying beside him, and watched the night sky as the flames from the lighthouse danced high into the darkness. The rain stopped. You could hear the crackling flames and sirens that were still far enough away. We lay there, watching the light show, while catching our breath. Finally, Dex replied,
"When you jumped out of the window, and when it exploded, I was ready to cover you, but you had already propelled yourself across the grass and were all in protective ninja mode or something."
"I've taken some classes," I answered breathlessly.
"Uh-huh."
He gasped and took in a deep breath. I rolled over and looked at him. He rolled his head to the side and looked at me. I found myself speechless. I honestly couldn't even get over the fact that we were alive. He slowly nodded. He looked sleepy, but I saw the understanding beneath his drooping lids. I felt like I could just stare at him and he would just know everything I was thinking. He reached over and grabbed my hand. He squeezed it and held it in the air above us, about as victorious a gesture as either of us could manage. I gave him a small smile.
"Are you hurt at all?"
he asked. I didn't feel anything until now. I wanted to stay in my sandy grave, but I knew I had cut the back of my head when I was thrown into the glass. I felt the bones of my shins throbbing, my elbows burned, and my throat felt raw from where the kelp squeezed me. Also, my lungs wheezed, my eyes stung, and in general, my whole body felt like a truck had hit it. "I'm okay," I said, though. He giggled.
"Oh, shit. Aren't you just Mary fucking Wonder Woman? I think I broke my fucking ankle from the fall, not to mention when I cracked my head on the stairs."
He reached up and rubbed the cut that ran along his forehead. When he stopped laughing to himself, he took in a deep breath and closed his eyes. The sirens were close now, and I could see red lights illuminating the trees in the distance. "What do we do now?" I asked, hoping I could just close my eyes, too. Maybe I would magically appear in my bed at home and everything would be dealt with. Dex grunted. "I mean, what do we say?" I continued. "Do we go back to Uncle Al's? Do we stay here and wait for help? How do we explain to Al, to anyone, what the hell just happened? By the way, some dead fisherman attacked me and blew up your lighthouse?"
"Dead?"
he scoffed, eyes still closed. I nodded. "He was dead, Dex. I mean, he wasn't alive, alive. He wasn't like us." Even my truthful explanation sounded weak. How could I even begin to explain what happened to anyone when I couldn't even explain it to the only person who was there?
He's dead now, he said without a trace of interest. And I honestly don't think that should even be mentioned. No one was supposed to be in the lighthouse at any rate, let alone some batshit crazy Captain Highlander.
He opened his eyes and rolled over on his side to look at me.
There will be no trace of him, whether he was already dead or not.
We'll have to lie.
No, we'll tell the police what we were doing there. Tell them I flicked a cigarette down the hall, and that started everything. Places like this have all sorts of fuels and chemicals still inside them.
For emphasis, he fished a package of cigarettes out of his pant cargo pockets, scrunching up his face in pain as he did so, and pulled a cigarette out. I noticed how shaky his hands were before I really noticed what he was doing. You don't smoke, I told him. I hadn't seen him smoke at all this weekend, let alone smell it on him.
I do, and I don't. My toothpick friend comes out when I'm in quitting mode, he spoke.
The cigarette bobbed between his subtly duck-like lips. He pulled out a gold lighter with his other hand from some other unseen pocket and lit the cigarette in one trained swoop. He took in a deep puff and blew the smoke out in rings that joined the flames in the sky. With a whoop, the urban sound of a police siren or an ambulance, I often confuse them, filled the air and echoed out of the trees.
Dex coughed. Okay, time to do this.
He got to his feet without making a sound, but I could tell he was in a lot of pain. He put his hand on his lower back and looked down at me. From his jaunty stance and wiggling cigarette, he reminded me of the silhouette of the Captain Morgan's pirate.
Do you want me to carry you?
He asked. I didn't know if he was belittling me or just being polite. I decided on the former just in case. No, I said forcefully and sat up. My abs burned with the crunch, especially the sides that bore the brunt of the kelp's pull earlier. I got to my knees and then slowly stood upright. I knew the hit on the back of my head would probably make me feel woozier than normal. I didn't dare touch it, though, in case Dex made a big deal about it. All I wanted to do was get home. And get to work. Oh, God. Work. The meeting? That thought alone had me starting to sway a bit. Dex reached out and steadied me with one hand and leaned down.
Can you make it? I wasn't kidding about carrying you, he said.
Well, it's better to be safe than sorry with you, isn't it? I thought. I shook my head, took in an invigorating breath of half-ocean air and half-burning fuel, and straightened up. The top of the embankment now swarmed with people in uniform and emergency vehicles. I guess a lighthouse explosion was one of the most exciting things to ever happen here. And now we were caught in the middle of it. Chapter 15. I thought talking to the curious police officers, EMTs, firefighters, and the local news reporter, plus Uncle Al and the twins, would have shed a lot of doubt on our story, but they all seemed content to buy it. One firefighter said a fire starts every week because of leftover engine oil and whatnot. What I think he meant was that drunken sailors got stupid, but as long as they believed what happened without questioning us, we were golden. And then there was Uncle Al's reaction. I felt extremely guilty for destroying his historic lighthouse. None of this would have happened had his stupid niece not shown up at his door with some slightly unhinged filmmaker. But Uncle Al looked nothing short of relieved. I guess he really did find the place evil, the cradle of some demonic, horrible spirit. I understood how right he was about that, and I think he did too. While we were explaining what happened, I noticed he had a suspicious look in his eyes. It wasn't accusatory, but rather a look of knowing there was more to the story than we were telling everyone. It actually calmed me, as if he was in on the secret without knowing. Either way, Dex and I were very lucky to not only walk out of there alive, as people kept telling us, oh, if they only knew, but also to be excused by the authorities without any further inquiries. That's not to say the ambulance attendants excused us so readily. They had to do a thorough once-over on both of us to make sure we didn't sustain any burns or injuries. Dex and I sat beside each other on the back bumper of the ambulance as the two medics poked and prodded. Dex's female attendant asked him if he was taking any medication. Dex hesitated and then said a name I couldn't pronounce, something Zapine. The woman did a double take.
It's for heartburn. Dex said, voice flat and eyes steady, until the attendant just nodded and went back to her business.
The hard-nosed Chinese guy that I had was making me nervous. He touched me in places, asking if it hurt, and then gave me the look as if he didn't believe me.
Half the time it did actually hurt, but I knew the more I admitted, the more they would want to take me to a hospital for further inspection. All I wanted to do was get back home. I started to regret sticking around and wished Dex and I had just booked it back to the house and played ignorant. While Dex's attendant left to go get something out of the front of the ambulance, my head was tilted back rather roughly. The guy, I think his name was Jesse, peered at my neck suspiciously.
"How did this happen?"
he asked, referring to my neck bruises. I could see Dex out of the corner of my eye, craning his head to look over in my direction. We never had a chance to explain what had happened to us earlier. I guess he never knew what happened to me at the top of the tower, just as I still didn't know what happened to him in that room. I had to think quickly. Sexual asphyxiation. You ever tried it? You should. Though my head was tilted back, and I couldn't see Jesse's face, I know he was shocked. In fact, I could tell he looked over at Dex for an explanation. I hoped Dex would throw the attendant off this trail.
"It's a little game we play,"
Dex said, his voice laced with subtle sarcasm. I wanted to high-five him for his answer.
"You know how it is."
The attendant replied and brought my head forward. He suspiciously looked me in the eyes. I gave him a look as if he was the one who was a freak. I nearly made some caustic David Carradine remark when he slid his hand down the back of my head. He stuffed it where my hair was wet from being smashed against the glass. He took his hand away slowly, and we both stared at it in the ugly light of the ambulance. It was red with blood. I looked over at Dex. He was staring at me, eyes wide and mouth dropped a little, but didn't say anything, even though I could see words were forming at the tip of his tongue. Jesse held his hands in front of my face and said matter-of-factly, "You're bleeding, and you have glass in your hair." At this moment, I could have chosen to cover up the matter with some inarticulate lie, or I could flat-out tell him I didn't know how it happened.
"That was my fault," Dex suddenly spoke up. "I panicked when I pushed us out the window. I guess I didn't check that it was a clean break."
I managed to smile at Jesse and didn't risk looking at Dex in case Jesse caught on. Jesse shook his head and motioned for me to go farther into the ambulance.
"Is she going to be okay?"
Dex asked. I could almost hear a hint of boredom in his tone. Evidently, Jesse heard it too. It gave him the stink eye.
"I'm going to clean out the wound and check for a concussion. I think you're free to go now."
Dex shrugged and walked away. As Jesse sat me down on a stretcher, I could see Uncle Al and the twins coming up to Dex. They all looked my way, and Dex began explaining something to them. Then Jesse closed the ambulance doors, shutting me inside the small, sterile room with him. I felt very uncomfortable. He stopped in front of me and narrowed his eyes. There was something very vindictive about this guy, like it was his life's mission to mistrust everyone he meets.
"Is that what really happened?"
he asked seriously. "What, with my head?" I wasn't about to tell him the truth, but I had a feeling he wouldn't have been satisfied with it anyway. Or he would have recommended I be sent to a different kind of hospital. He put a stiff hand on my shoulder. I eyed it with disdain, but he didn't remove it.
"Did your boyfriend hurt you?"
I laughed. I couldn't help it. Jesse, the attendant, looked annoyed at my outburst and took a step back. "He's not my boyfriend," I said. "He's my partner. I mean, sort of. And like we said, we were filming in the lighthouse hoping to get a glimpse of something supernatural. When all hell broke loose, the only thing we could do was bust out of the window. I may have hit my head when I went through. I was probably concentrating on not, you know, dying and didn't notice."
"May have,"
he said slowly, his head moving from side to side as if he had a slow-motion tick. "Look, are you going to fix my head or not? Isn't that your job?" I spat out wearily. I was growing more exhausted by the minute, and my brain swirled with a million events that I refused to process.
"Fine, just trying to help."
He flipped my head down and proceeded to sift through my thick hair, mopping crap up with swabs and pads that reeked of alcohol and stung like hell. Minuscule pieces of glass rained down to the sticky floor like tiny snowflakes. 10 minutes later, he finished with a hardcore band-aid and a square of gauze he stuck awkwardly at the back of my head. "This would go down well at work tomorrow." I could just imagine Frida going, "Well, Perry, the job would have been yours, but we decided to go with someone who didn't look like she drank a liter of tequila over the weekend and consequently hit her head on a bathtub during some kinky sex game." "Can I go now?" I asked impatiently.
"You really should go to the hospital to get checked out for a concussion,"
he answered. "Maybe I will when I get back to Portland tonight. I just want to go home."
"You won't be able to drive."
I rolled my eyes. "Well, lucky for me, he's driving." I gestured in the direction of the closed doors, hoping Dex was still outside. I felt so confined inside this fluorescent-lit doctor's office on wheels.
Technically, he shouldn't be driving either, he said morbidly.
I'm sure he's...
Not on his medication, anyway,
Jesse finished.
Medication?
I must have looked confused because Jesse raised his eyebrows in mock surprise.
Oh, you didn't know about his medication,
he mused casually.
Olanzapine is a very powerful antipsychotic and typically intensifies when patients partake in smoking.
My heart grew cold. Dex was taking antipsychotics? I almost joked to myself on how they didn't seem to work very well when I realized the reality of it. Antipsychotic?
Primarily used to treat schizophrenia. You don't know this man very well, do you?
That's none of your business, I snapped and stood up. I fought the wooziness that tried to take me over. I walked hunched over to the doors and opened them. I was met with the cold night air. The fire was pretty much contained, and except for a few glowing embers here and there and some leftover strands of foundation, the lighthouse was reduced to a black pile of smoldering mush. Uncle Al and Dex stood beside each other, facing the ambulance. When they saw me, both their faces lit up. Al's was one of fatherly love and concern, but Dex's face... I had to look at him with new eyes. I stood still at the base of the ambulance, wanting to observe him from a distance. He shoved his hands in the pockets of his slick, slightly oversized raincoat, which still had particles of sand sticking to it. I noticed now how it was slightly too big for him, making him look shorter than he was. Dirt had splashed across his black fluvogs and up onto his gray cargo pants. He stared straight at me, head tilted down in the usual fashion, maybe wondering what I was thinking or doing. His cheekbones cast dark shadows down the sides of his face. His long mouth was closed and twitching slightly, snaking across his jaw. His eyes were intense but curious as they stared back at me, hard little dots searching in his deep-set sockets. His black brows inched toward each other and deepened his omnipresent frown line. The rest of his wide forehead contracted, as did the freshly bandaged cut. A longish strand of wet black hair had flopped forward and stuck to it. Slowly, he opened his mouth and stuck out his tongue. It was about as large as his mouth and lay flat against his chin. His eyes never changed. Jesus, who was this guy? My pulse quickened. I started to feel woozy again.
What's wrong, Perry? Uncle Al asked, coming for me.
I shook my head and bent over slightly, hands on my knees.
She should go to the hospital, just in case, I heard Jesse say behind me.
I slowly turned. He stood on the bumper and stared at Dex. Dex looked back at Jesse, slowly put his tongue back into his mouth, and casually extended his middle finger at him.
Okay, Perry, Al said, putting his arm around me and not noticing the Dex-Jesse scene. Let's take you to the hospital.
I'm not fucking going anywhere, I cried out, the bitterness in my voice surprising me. Everyone looked shocked. Al took his hand off of my shoulder. Dex remained in the background and put his hand back inside his pocket.
All right, we are done here, Jesse said as he rolled his eyes and slammed the door shut.
I let out a sigh of relief as he walked to the front of the ambulance and got in. I looked at Al apologetically. I'm sorry, Uncle Al, I said meekly. I'm fine, really. I just want to go home. I'm sure Mom will be sending me off to the hospital anyway as soon as she sees this war wound on my head. He sighed, but nodded.
Okay, you're old enough to make your own choices, I guess.
He looked at both Dex and me.
Come on, I've got the truck here, if the boys haven't already left. I'll take you back, and we can all forget that this disaster ever happened.
Those were the sweetest words I could have ever heard. Back at the house, I packed up as quickly as I could without overexerting myself. Turns out it was midnight. My iPhone died a horrible death in the flood, so I hadn't known the time. Chalk up an electronic expense for me and another reason why the promotion was so important. I called my parents and explained that I would most likely be coming home in the middle of the night, but not to wait up for me. Of course, I knew they would. And, of course, my father was yelling at me over how irresponsible I was. Thankfully, Al got on the phone and calmed his brother down, explaining mostly everything and leaving out the injured part. I figured my dad asked about Dex, too, because Al said, she seems to be in good hands. Yes, he's a trustworthy guy. Speaking of the trustworthy guy, Dex had actually been in the bathroom the whole time I talked on the phone. It would have been weird at any other time, but after what Jesse had said, I started to worry. Was Dex really psychotic? I mean, they wouldn't call them antipsychotics if he wasn't. And if he was, what kind of psychotic was he? Schizophrenic? Did he hear voices? Was he suicidal? Was he dangerous? I quietly scooted down the hall and paused outside the bathroom door. I was about to knock when, "I'll be out in a second," Dex said behind the door, sensing me. "Oh, okay," I said, feeling kind of embarrassed. I stepped back and leaned against the wall. I would just tell him I really had to go. The door swung open. He had changed into new clothes and was carrying his duffel bag in one hand. He raised one eyebrow at me, a wry smile creeping on one corner of his mouth.
"Checking up on me?"
"No," I shook my head, hoping I sounded convincing. "I have to go."
"There are two bathrooms," he said, walking past me.
I caught the scent of freshly applied aftershave in the air. His face did look smoother. His stash was neatly trimmed. I quickly hopped in the bathroom. Now was as good of a time as ever to examine my own face. It was not pretty, unless you considered the living dead to be pretty. I can say for certain that I did not. My reflection was ghastly. I was so white that I could have been transparent. Even my freckles, which normally stood out across my nose, were almost gone as if they were hiding in fright. The mascara that once covered my eyelashes had migrated beneath my eyes. My eyes lacked their usual sparkle. They looked lifeless and dull. And my neck was atrocious. The bruises from the kelp, which did suspiciously look like handprints, were a horrid mix of blue, purple, and yellow. I would have to wear a turtleneck tomorrow, and a hat, and sunglasses. I was going to look like Yoko Ono at my meeting. I hoped Frida wasn't a Beatles fan. I sighed, then caught myself. Here I worried about my job, when 2 hours ago I almost lost my life to things that I couldn't explain or even let myself think about. It just didn't seem real. When I emerged, I didn't look any better, but Dex was in the car, waiting to leave. I gave Uncle Al the biggest hug I could manage and told him how thankful I was for everything he did for me this weekend. He walked me to the door, and just as I was leaving, put his hand gently on my shoulder. "Perry," he said, briefly looking down as if he wasn't sure how to continue. "I know there's more to the story. Of what happened tonight. More than anything, I am glad you were okay, but if you ever want to talk about it to someone who understands, I'm just a phone call or a car ride away." I gave him the most gracious smile. "Thank you, Uncle Al." And though I knew I might possibly phone him to discuss what happened, there was no way in hell I would return to the Oregon coast for a very, very long time. I walked through the midnight air to Dex's SUV. It felt like ages ago that we had our heart-to-heart on the side of the road. I say heart-to-heart because it was the most I had really talked to Dex and learned something about him. Now we had the whole car ride back, and even though I had so many things I wanted to ask him, I didn't know how. I opened the door. Dex sat in the driver's seat, fiddling intently with his camera. I threw my bag in the car and climbed in. "Is it okay?" I asked hopefully. He sucked in the corner of his mouth.
"I don't know. The LCD is cracked, but I'm praying that the memory card will be fine."
"That's the same that happened with my camera last week. Lens cracked, but the memory card worked." He nodded in a way that made me question whether he had actually heard me. He tossed the camera behind him into the back seat as if it was completely worthless, put the car into drive and his foot to the pedal. Uncle Al's house, the wild coast, and the wild nightmares disappeared behind us, swallowed by the darkness. We didn't speak for about 10 minutes. I could hear Elton John singing "Someone Saved My Life Tonight" very quietly from the speakers. I found the lyrics to be especially poignant. I looked up at Dex, his face slightly aglow from the instrument panel. I could see he knew I was looking at him, but he kept his eyes on the road. His eyes looked sad, or maybe just tired. "How are you doing?" I inquired, keeping my voice barely above a whisper.
"Great," was his answer. As usual, I couldn't tell if he was being facetious or not. Either way, I got the "don't talk to me" vibe.
I smiled weakly and leaned against the window, the reflections from inside the car making the passing darkness seem abstract. I must have dozed off for a while, because when I came to, a small puddle of drool had formed on my right shoulder.
"You snore," Dex said.
Sheepishly, I raised my head and wiped the drool off of me. "I drool, too," I added. I eyed the clock. 2 a.m. I had no idea how I was going to survive the coming day. As I mulled over my plan to act normal at work and my plan to win them over at the meeting and get the promotion, which so far consisted of just acting enthusiastic and agreeing with everything they said, Dex let out a small sigh.
"I'm sorry," he said.
I eyed him, surprised at his admittance.
"For everything," he continued when I didn't speak. "This wasn't the way things were supposed to happen. I mean, in Wine Babes, I've never been attacked by killer grapes, as cool as that sounds."
I closed my eyes and leaned back. "It's not your fault."
"Yes, it is my fault. I obviously didn't think this through. I mean, you're just a young girl with a promising life ahead of her, and I drag you off to some haunted lighthouse? I mean, fuck. What the hell was I thinking?"
I could see flashes of remorse behind his eyes. My heart ached,
but just a little.
"Obviously, my life isn't all that promising if I agreed to go off to some haunted lighthouse with you," I reminded him quickly.
"And you barely know me," he continued, not hearing me. "You don't know me, and I don't know you, and I convinced you this would be a fan-fucking-tastic idea. You almost died tonight. You could have died."
I straightened up and leaned closer to him. "You almost died, too?" Dex shook his head.
"I just didn't realize what we were up against. I'm sorry for making you go up those stairs. I know you wanted nothing more than to get out of there, and I should have let you. And then I should have followed you."
"If I really wanted to, I could have gotten past you."
"I just... Oh, fuck. We should never have gone back in there."
"Well, we did. And we both decided that, remember?" Dex didn't look convinced, but he didn't protest either. He fell silent, and his mouth was firmly set.
"I'm afraid to ask what happened to you," he finally said.
I was afraid to answer. I didn't want to recall any of it, even though it was very fresh in my head, as well as on my throat. But I couldn't keep it all inside, either. If I did, you could bet I would need Dex's pills very soon. Which reminded me, I wanted to ask him about that, but how on earth do you bring up something so personal? By the way, rumor has it you're a psycho. And so I told Dex exactly what happened in full detail, from the rubber boots old Roddy was wearing to hearing Dex's voice when I was being hung out the window to what he had said before I leaped out of the building. "She told me you would listen and that you would come. I've been waiting for another like you." That's what he said. I don't know who she is, but the only thing that makes sense, if you can call it that, is that he was talking about the lady, the creepy clown lady. Dex didn't say anything, so I attempted to lighten the mood. And then I gave a fantastic one-liner along the lines of, "The only thing you're getting is death." He didn't even crack a smile. I wondered when I would see that perpetual smirk again. I was starting to prefer that Dex to this gravely serious one. "And that's what happened," I added, hoping he would say something. He chewed on his lip for a second before saying,
"You say that so casually, like this happens to you every weekend."
"Well, it kind of has." He shot me a look that made me shrink back a little.
"I'm taking this seriously, Perry. I wish you would, too."
"Well, I'm sorry I use humor to get through tough situations. This whole fucking situation is absurd, and I don't even know how I'm supposed to process what just happened, let alone feel it. It's just so impossible. It doesn't feel real, and in all honesty, how can it be real? It can't. It just can't. It can't. It can't. It can't. It can't. It can't. It can't." I started laughing at the absurdity of it all, a loud, howling laugh that shook my face and caused tears to run down it. A few wires in my brain began to snap. One by one, I could feel my thoughts unraveling as the face of old Roddy came back, the feeling of my head going through glass, the stickiness of the kelp tentacles, the cold water as it drowned my lungs. Snap, snap, snap. My emotions were in an out-of-control funnel. My thoughts circled from reality to reality. I kept laughing and laughing and laughing until Dex pulled the car over to the side of the road. He put it in park and flicked on the interior light.
"Perry,"
he said cautiously. He moved his hand over towards my knee. I whacked it off impulsively and cackled, "Who's the crazy one now? You or me?" Dex frowned, looking utterly lost. I couldn't blame him. I had completely lost control.
"Shh, it's okay," he whispered and reached for me again.
I didn't hit him this time, though I suddenly had the strong urge to punch him in the face. His eyes widened for a second as if he knew what I was thinking.
"Barry, calm down."
"Calm down," I spat out. "Calm down? You're the psychotic one, Dex. Better give me one of your pills, son." He pursed his lips, frown line deepening. "That's right," I exclaimed. "I know what olanzapine is. When were you going to tell me that I was pairing up with a schizo?" I know what I said was mean, but I didn't care. I laughed away the guilt. I felt this huge surge of energy, like trapped, tormenting emotions rising up from my belly. If I stopped laughing, I would probably start screaming. He took in what I said without a fuss. It was like he didn't hear me. Instead, he turned to face me and moved in closer until his face was right up in mine. I watched him in slow motion. I saw his eyes turn from a flat brown shade to a vivid, sparkling mahogany. His pupils contracted, turning into tiny pricks of black. They turned mean, very mean.
"Hey!"
He screamed so loudly that my ears felt numb. I could feel tiny droplets of his spit fall on my cheek. The impact of his voice literally stopped my heart.
"Get a hold of yourself!"
I don't know if you've ever had someone scream right in your face, but let me tell you, it's the most terrifying experience. In one action, I felt like I experienced all of the rage that I imagined tore Dex inside, and it was directed at me. I stopped laughing. I stopped breathing, I stopped blinking, I stopped moving, full stop. Dex continued to look at me, eyes boring through mine with so much power and so much hate, it made my stomach queasy. Then he exhaled and looked down. When he looked back up, his eyes were full of apology and remorse again.
"I'm sorry," he said quietly. "I had to."
I expected him to move away and give me some breathing room, but he kept his head right there. I assumed he wanted to further torment me, but he looked so compassionate. Such a 180 from 2 seconds ago that I knew he was trying to make sure I was all right. It reminded me of the film Good Will Hunting when Robin Williams says it's not your fault over and over again to Matt Damon until he snaps and breaks down. I had already snapped. With the tears that started to rush to my eyes, I knew it was time to break down. I kept my eyes open and unblinking for as long as I could until they were so full of tears that I had to shut them. Yesterday, I was too embarrassed to cry in front of Dex, but now I didn't care at all. And my tears were exactly what he wanted. I began to sob and bawl, letting out everything from tonight, everything from last week, and probably everything from the last 22 years. Dex watched me for a few seconds, then put both arms around my shoulders and gently pulled me into him. I resisted slightly at first, not wanting the fuss, but then just gave up and buried my head into his chest. I was probably getting snot all over him, but I didn't care. He didn't say anything now to calm me or make me stop crying. He just held me, which was more effective than anything. It made me realize in the back of my wrecked head how much I needed affection, that human touch. It's something you don't really think about until you're reminded how much you are lacking it. And now I realized how much I wanted it, needed it from him, this topsy-turvy medicated man who only entered my life a few days ago. I still didn't know him, but I felt like I didn't need to. They say that people who experience extreme situations together develop an unspoken bond between them. No matter how unsettling it felt to know he was a potential madman, no matter how frustrating it was to deal with him from minute to minute, no matter how much I knew he would go back to Seattle in an hour, there was a line of unseen energy, a bond, drawing me to him. And selfishly, naively, I hoped he felt it too. His neck smelled like that delicious aftershave and natural musk. Maybe I could stay like this forever. But my tears slowed, and my breath and heart resumed to a reasonable rate, and I think I soaked his jacket front. I reluctantly pulled away and grimaced. I fished out a damp tissue from my pocket and dabbed it up. "Sorry," I whispered, embarrassed.
He looked down and smirked.
Hey, I've had worse things on me. Goat shit, regurgitated wine, this is nothing.
I couldn't help but smile. I quickly wiped the now soggy tissue across my eyes and nose. His face remained only a hand's length away from mine, and I didn't want to look completely wretched. I noticed he still had his arms around me, so obviously I didn't look that bad. That said, he was crazy, so... Something came across his eyes. They started to go back into his sexy, sleepy default mode, and his brows twitched almost painfully, as if he remembered something. He took his hands off of me while looking slightly abashed. It felt like there was a weird tension hanging in the air, and he just noticed. He cleared his throat and averted his eyes.
You'll be okay now.
Sure, I muttered, looking at my mascara-smudged hand.
Believe me, I've been there. I've seen stuff. You've let it all out. It can't do any more damage. It's when you don't let it out, well...
He put his hand in his pocket, produced a prescription bottle of pills, and shook it for effect. What happened? I asked cautiously. How much stuff did he have in his pockets?
That's a story for another time, he said simply.
I sensed a humorous inflection in his voice, even though his eyes remained blank. Oh, I said stupidly.
I'm not schizophrenic, just so you know. Just sort of bipolar.
That makes sense. He rolled his eyes.
The medication can really mess with your head. Not to mention the fucking gigantic gut I get. Too much and I resemble Tom Arnold. Too little and, well, I'm really not crazy if that's what you're worried about.
I'm not worried, and you don't look like Tom Arnold. You should get some up-to-date analogies, though.
That's because I'm only taking just enough to get by. And even with the minimal dosage, I get this.
He grabbed his stomach. He had barely anything to grab.
Women love this, he said with a wink.
I'm sure your girlfriend does, I said quietly.
You'd think, he joked. But she just nags me to go to the gym. Have you ever been to a gym? It's the gayest shit ever. I went for the first 6 months of us dating until I got tired of paying someone to torture me.
I'm sure she understands. He shook his head.
You've seen what she looks like. She's got some pretty high standards. Anyway, she doesn't know I'm still on medication.
That surprised me, and I searched his face to see if he was kidding. His deadpan expression didn't aid me at all. You're joking. How could she not know? He shrugged.
Because she doesn't.
Doesn't she see you taking pills?
I can be discreet. I doubt it would make a difference.
I narrowed my eyes at this new information. I already felt quite biased, but now I knew Jen was a bitch. And you live with her, I said incredulously.
Uh-huh, he said casually. Anyway, changing the topic now. You're going to be okay?
I don't know. I sniffled and sat back in the seat.
That was a rhetorical question, which means yes, you are.
He eyed the clock.
And we should probably start heading back. Just try and let me know if you feel like laughing hysterically again so I can turn up the volume.
Dex started the engine and brought the car back onto the highway. I felt exhausted and slightly relieved at the same time. I closed my eyes and had almost drifted asleep when a question pulled at me. Dex?
Yes, ma'am.
What did you mean when you said you've been there, you've seen stuff?
Go to sleep, kiddo.
Okay. I sighed sleepily. And soon, everything faded to black. Chapter 16. I woke up from my short, dreamless sleep as I felt Dex's car come to a rolling stop. We parked on the street in front of my house. Even in the dark, with leaves scattering in the wind and tossing the thin branches of our cherry trees about, it looked like the nicest place on earth.
Home, sweet home, Dex said.
I felt awkward. Did I hug him goodbye, shake his hand? Both seemed strangely inappropriate.
Feels like the end of a first date, doesn't it?
He remarked, a smirk deepening one corner of his mouth. I blushed furiously. Yeah, I guess. Amused, he opened his arms and said, come here. I leaned over and hugged him. He squeezed me very tight, grunting humorously. I squeezed back, not wanting to let go, but also not wanting to give him the wrong idea. The wrong idea being that I wanted to keep touching him. Eventually, I pulled away and looked to the side.
Hey,
he whispered as he slipped his hand under my chin and tipped it up. I had no choice but to meet his eyes. They danced in the dark.
You okay?
I stared at his lips, my breath deepening. The urge to kiss him grew frighteningly strong, so much it surprised me. I obviously wasn't okay, but for different reasons than he thought. I saved face by closing my eyes and nodding. I'm good. Satisfied, he let go of my chin and sat back in his seat.
Fabulous.
I quickly opened the door and hopped out of the car before I did or said something stupid. I heard scenes from an Italian restaurant faintly playing from the speakers, which immediately reminded me of his sing-along session in the car yesterday. Felt so long ago. I must have smiled involuntarily because he handed me my bag from behind the seat and said, "Want me to start singing again? I'll sing you the whole CD. My Life, Piano Man, She's Always a Woman." I could tell he was joking, but I secretly wanted nothing more. I swallowed hard and gave him a shy smile.
"Guess this is goodbye? For now," he said. "Go and get some proper sleep and rock your fucking faces off at the meeting tomorrow. I'll call you when I've got something interesting to say."
"Sounds good. Bye, Dex." I was about to close the door when he stopped me.
"Wait."
He reached behind him into his bag and pulled out his newsboy cap.
"Wear this tomorrow. It'll cover up your brain hole. And you'll look really cool."
I took it from him, plopped it on my head, and tipped the brim. "Thanks." He saluted me with his fingers as I shut the door. I turned and walked towards the house, hearing the car drive off. I looked behind me, and he was gone. I sighed, pausing at the front door to gather my thoughts before unlocking it and returning to my old life. As one can imagine, the next day turned into utter madness times a billion. First of all, I came home to find my mother asleep in my bed, apparently waiting up for me. Thankfully, Dex had given me his cap, which covered up the wound on the back of my head, and I did not need that to freak out my mother. Of course, she bombarded me with a ton of worried mother questions that I easily deflected by saying how badly I needed the sleep, which was true. However, it didn't make a lick of difference in the end, considering I woke up feeling like absolute shit. Every bone and muscle in my body ached to high heaven. I couldn't even bend down to tie my boots and had to opt for ballet flats. Those, coupled with a turtleneck to hide the ever-deepening bruises on my neck and Dex's cap on my head, made me look an awful lot like Yoko Ono after all. My choice of wardrobe was the least of my worries, though, because along with my physical pain, I was also in a state of mental shock. I was so tired and exhausted to my core that I was borderline delirious. Even forming sentences seemed to be a challenge, which did not bode well for answering the phones. Even two Red Bulls couldn't help my jumbled thoughts, although they did elevate my heart rate to cardiac arrest status, which doubled by the time I walked into my meeting. But through crazy luck or the pity of the universe, I somehow not only got through the meeting with Frida and the head honcho, John Danvers, but I won them over and got the promotion. Yeah, I know. I can't explain it myself, except that I managed to project a very professional and enthusiastic image and even showed them some of the advertising plans I created back at the university. The position was just for a production coordinator, which was a pretty stressful and lowly job, but it was still better and more relevant to me than being stuck in reception. Plus, it paid $3 extra an hour, and I would get benefits. I was on cloud nine for the rest of the day. Literally. All the painkillers I was popping, plus the lack of shut-eye, made me feel like I was floating away to la-la land. My position started the next Monday, which meant all this week I had to train my replacement. Turns out they had the temp who subbed for me last week in mind, which in turn meant a fairly easy week for me. I could just make the other person do all the work. Easy is what I needed. With my brain and body all jumbled, I needed things to go as smoothly as possible. I wanted to put the weekend behind me more than anything and start focusing on a new path. The longer I engaged in the everyday swing of normal life, the more absurd the idea of being a ghost blogger became. Plus, I hadn't heard from Dex. I know he said he'd call if he knew something, but still, I guess a part of me hoped he would call anyway. Later that evening, I went onto my Facebook to check his profile, like the snoop I am. I found no evidence he had logged on recently, but people had written on his wall during our absence. Some guys, some girls, mostly inside jokes and potential plans. It felt weird knowing Dex had a life outside of me and the lighthouse, as egotistical and stupid as that sounds. It only hammered home that Dex was still just a man, A befuddling man, but just a man, in the end. A man with a hot wine babe for a girlfriend, an interesting and varied job, a nice voice, a social life, and a sordid past. A handsome, beguiling man whose eyes read your very soul and whose smirk held you in contempt. A man I tried my hardest not to think about. That was easier said than done. Ada kept bringing him up around the dinner table. "I think he looks creepy," Ada said haughtily between petite bites of her roast. "I was starting to doubt if you'd ever come back." "Thanks, Ada," I muttered, glaring at her.
"Well, it would have been nice if we had had a chance to meet him," my mom complained wistfully, "instead of having to stare at him from a distance."
"Yeah, well, I thought maybe you'd embarrass me," I replied truthfully.
"Oh, whatever, as you would say. Why would that matter?" my mom said, exchanging a look with my father, who was silent, as he normally was, whenever there was food in front of him.
"Because she has the hots for him," Ada interjected. I rolled my eyes. "Oh, please, I just met the guy." She wagged her fork at me. "I saw the way you were ogling his Facebook pictures."
She turned to my mother.
"He has a girlfriend, too." My mouth dropped. "How do you know that?"
"Maybe I know how to use a search engine better than you can," she answered primly.
"Perry," my mother teased, looking at me.
"You do like this man."
"No," I exclaimed and nearly threw down my fork.
"The lady doth protest too much," Ada smirked.
"You don't even know what you're quoting there, Blondie," I shot back.
"Girls," my dad said sternly but gently, "let's let Perry relax a bit. It's not every weekend that you blow up my brother's lighthouse."
I couldn't tell if my dad was actually angry, as was usually the case with him. I had, after all, blown up his brother's lighthouse, which couldn't be taken lightly. Even though it wasn't really my fault, it did look that way. However, I picked up some compassion in his voice and gave him an apologetic face.
"We're just glad you were okay, Pumpkin."
He reached over and tapped my hand.
"And proud, too. Let's toast your new job, Chin Chin."
I beamed, despite myself, and we raised our glasses of wine. Ada raised her soda with a dry expression, though I could see the tiniest hint of sisterly affection. After dinner and more small talk about my new position, I retired to my room ready to conk out. It was 7 p.m., and somehow even getting 12 hours of sleep didn't seem like it would be enough. I packed some things into my purse when I heard the door shut behind me. Fearing the worst, I spun around in a panic. It was just Ada staring at me in horror.
"What the fuck happened to your head?"
she cried out and raced over to inspect me. I swatted her arms away and awkwardly felt my head. The cap had fallen off, leaving my snazzy band-aid exposed.
"It's nothing. Go away."
I glared at her. She crossed her arms to indicate she wasn't about to go anywhere.
"What happened? Tell me, or I'll tell Mom and Dad."
I knew she would, too. I wanted to tell her, but I didn't know what version, the official story or the truth. Despite all our differences, though, Ada was my sister. Looking into her jaded eyes, impeccably done up with the best makeup, I knew she had some reserves of belief left for me.
"Do you want the truth or the official story?"
"What's the story you'll end up blogging about?" she asked smartly. She had a point there. If we were, in fact, still doing this project, at the moment I didn't know what Dex would salvage from his camera, let alone the fact that the whole thing might get shot down. We would obviously show people the truth. That meant my parents, the authorities, Uncle Al, would all find out the truth was wildly different from anything they had heard. That said, I also knew they wouldn't believe it anyway. No matter what kind of proof we provided, no matter how well I wrote about the experience, they would assume I made it up. Well, let them.
"So?" she said impatiently. "What is it? What happened? For real?"
"Okay," I said hesitantly.
"For real?"
"You better sit down and check your cynicism at the door." She sighed and flopped down on my bed, all gangly limbs and rolling eyes. I started from the beginning, but left out the part about the creepy clown lady because that would just open up another can of worms. By the time I finished, I could see Ada was struggling with it. She chewed thoughtfully on her nails and watched me closely.